Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets in the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, are the dynamic duo Chad Riley and Spencer Williams.
Hey, what's
Howdy.
Up?
What's up, guys?
Yeah.
Spencer's excited.
I'm very excited.
Spencer's the dynamic, and I am the duo. There are two of me.
Oh, yeah. We've had two Chad Rileys on the podcast the whole time.
The whole time?
Well, thankfully, I do not have to suffer alone. With us as well is our good friend and co-comic book fanatic, Mr. Corey Hunt. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing well. We're excited to talk about this movie and dive right in, so we're glad you could be a part of the conversation. Chad, why don't you hit us with a little bit of those opening credits?
Sure will. If you, that's you, not me, you. If you could heal from pretty much any injury, what would you do with your time? Obviously, we here at the Filmlosophers podcast would continue to be presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. Because that's what we do. What can we say? We're creatures of habit. If you're joining us from the future and forgot whether or not you've already subscribed to the podcast, go ahead and re-up with us. The Filmlosopher streams new episodes each week on Wednesdays on Google Play, Spotify, Libsyn, Audioboom, iTunes, Stitcher, and Player FM.
There's finally a place where you can get your fix on all the meta commentary in the multiverse. Our social media pages. Shocker! Be sure to follow us or like our pages on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to join in. Finally, you can access our entire library of enriching content on our website at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got a website. We're using it. And make sure to head over there to catch up on all previous episodes because you know what? We've actually had some good episodes.
Yeah, there are a couple.
Yeah, like at least four.
What? Both you guys.
No, every episode's good. What are we saying?
Corey, we're hiring winners. New hosts, so we hope you're interested.
This is your audition. Don't clam up.
No pressure.
But like we said, we had a great film in store to talk about for you today, and that is Deadpool 2. If you haven't had a chance to see the film actually debut this past weekend, it did drop for public viewing for, you know, what was it, just domestically?
No, it's here and a few other markets. It's not everywhere internationally yet, but it's got a lot going on around the world.
That it does. I don't know if you guys were, if you listened into last week's episode, we actually talked about the first film and how its impact in the whole idea of making an R-rated superhero
movie. Yeah, that takes some shots at the genre as a whole and does the whole fourth wall breaking meta commentary. I mean, people really took to the first one pretty well.
Yeah. And obviously, like we said, the first film holds a very special place in our heart for reasons that we went into great detail last week. So if you don't know what we're talking about, jump into that episode right after you finish
this
one.
We're sure not going to tell you here.
Nope, because you got to go back and listen in. So, yeah, Deadpool 2. Chad, give us that official synopsis, goodness.
Absolutely. Wade Wilson, also known as the wisecracking mercenary Deadpool, joins forces with three mutants, Bedlam, Shatterstar, and Domino. Well, there are more than three, but there are at least three, to protect Russell, a young boy with powerful abilities, from the all-powerful time-sliding Cable.
There you go. Directed by David Leitch. The film sees the return of star Ryan Reynolds in the titular role alongside Morena Baccarin, T.J. Miller, Brianna Hildebrand, and Stefan... Here we go.
You got this.
Kapachek?
Don't look at me like I know what it says.
Stefan, you're a good guy. We're just murdering your last name. Alongside them is new cast members with Zazie Beetz, Josh Brolin, Bill Skarsgård, Terry Crews, Julian Dennison, and many other surprise cameos. So just so we can state this right now and everybody knows, there will be spoilers in this particular review. So if you have not seen the film, by all means, go check it out first and then come back and listen in. Because or maybe if you're somebody
or,
who likes spoilers.
You know, some people do like to hear spoil. They like to be spoiled before they see a movie because they are on the fence. They don't know if they want to see the movie or not.
What about you, Corey?
So if that's one of you, stick around.
Corey, are you the type of person who likes to be spoiled first and then go see the film, or do you...
No, not really, no. I like surprises.
You like surprises? Yeah. Well, surprise, we're recording. We didn't tell you.
Oh, but... no. Yeah. Really? People are listening to this?
Yeah, we actually... Yeah.
Surprisingly.
I mean, at least our parents and just...
I know mine
significant
are!
Others and...
I'll tell my mom about it.
You are going to?
Yeah.
Yes, it's another one.
We had a lot of fun talking last week, and there was a lot of speculation as to where this film was going to go. We weren't sure as to what direction they were going to take the storyline. Obviously, it's Deadpool, so every possibility is technically on the table because that's just the nature of the character, plain and simple. And then you introduce somebody as iconic as Cable to the fray, and now you have even more opportunities to go. So we had a chance to see the film this past weekend, all of us together. And we had a good time, some more than others. And we'll jump into exactly who was the other. But needless to say, we all went together and we had a chance to talk about it. And thankfully, like I said, Corey, Mr. Corey Hunt was with us. So he got a chance to be a part of that. The film Deadpool, obviously, like we said last week, is based on the Marvel Comics superhero of the same name. Exactly 20. And the film was debuted...
The
original film
debuted, 25 years after Deadpool, the character, first appeared in comics.
So that makes this 27?
Seven-ish, yeah.
27. Deadpool became the first R-rated movie, the first film.
We do math, everybody. We do math.
To have a three-day opening weekend of over $100 million at the U.S. box office. This one's actually kind of on the way as well in terms of revenue.
Sure, yeah. They had a big Thursday opening that we were a part of and then had a good opening weekend to follow.
So... like we said, we're going to jump right into this. Like we said, spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Spence.
Those are all the buttons on the board.
So, just an FYI, ladies and gentlemen.
Is there an
gentlemen.
Applause button? Because you did that so well.
No, I don't have one up here yet.
That's all right. Mental applause.
We tried to do this last time, and Spence kind of gave up midway through the show. So, we're giving him another shot at the soundboard, and through encouragement and the cattle prod that we have next to the table, he willingly said he's going to do it.
I have a soundboard this time.
Yeah!
It's going to be great.
So, spoilers, of course. But as we dive into this film, let's kind of talk about anticipations and first impressions before getting into it. One of the biggest things with this film, like we said earlier, is that Deadpool is such a unique character to the Marvel comic book universe. His ability to not only speak to the fourth wall, but also his ability to just consistently just exist, you know, no matter what type of thing comes about, gives the opportunities for the films and the future films to go pretty much anywhere they want.
It's true. You know, honestly, I'm sorry, I apologize in advance. You're gonna have, this is a total curveball for you, but I was thinking about this after seeing Deadpool 2 on Thursday, and I've had a few days to consider it. And I was thinking, you know, Deadpool as a character, as odd as it sounds, he really kind of is like almost, I was thinking Shakespearean, but really like in stage plays, you would have in classical theater, you would have a character or characters that were part of the chorus that were able to address the audience and keep the story moving forward. The difference there was they were not also the main characters of the story. Deadpool does both. Deadpool announces things to the audience, has total sidebar conversations with the audience that the other characters hear him doing but don't know who he's talking to, and we do because we're the audience. But then he's also the main character of the story. So in a way... I think that one of the things that's really special about Deadpool as an idea, as a concept for a character, is that he basically has no limits. He has no boundaries in terms of what you can do with him.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of his purpose. His point is to be the clown who is the only... like, if you look at Shakespeare, for example, there are a number of plays where there is a fool or clown-type character that when you pay attention to the subtext of how it's written and the overall commentary that that character provides or allows in the story, what you learn is that usually the fool is the smartest character on stage. So to take that conceit and apply it in a far cruder manner, here with Deadpool, both in comics and in the two films that we've seen thus far, we're not counting Wolverine Origins because that was not actual Deadpool. That was just some other character with the same name.
Yeah, as we
and
said,
the same performer.
We don't talk about that film on this show.
But when you take a look at it, this like Deadpool is, he's the clownish guy that actually knows more than anybody else because he knows that he's a character in a story.
100%. No, I agree totally. It's
which gives you a lot of storytelling latitude.
Yeah,
that I think is something that the filmmakers have thus far done a decent job leveraging that and saying, you know what, he can crack a joke that only the audience gets, or you know, he can do something completely ridiculous that no character would do except for Deadpool.
In a bit more of a relatable parallel, he's kind of like a more substantial Bugs Bunny, where sure. Bugs Bunny is pretty much the capable character who breaks the fourth wall, knows the jokes that are inside between himself and the audience. And if it was a little bit more pushed, and I guess there are some forms where it actually is, he could be a little bit more crude and raunchier, however. But I think in terms of relatability, I think that's one of those areas where it kind of makes that parallel, you know, clear. But I do agree with what you're saying. 100%.
That's not a bad idea.
No, it's
Bugs
no.
Bunny. I guess people still watch Looney Tunes.
They're
still around.
Yeah.
I like
them. Do they make new ones? That's a good question for another time.
So. Yeah. I hope not.
I think they do.
What?
I don't know. Just kind of jumping off a little bit. I hope they don't make any more. Because you have the classics. You have
Come
like
on, Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. And
how are you going to have new classics if you don't make new stuff?
Because you just rewatch the classics. That's what they're called, the classics, Spence.
No, that's when you get
Hit
stuck
a button.
In like
Hit a button.
Button!
No!
There you go. No! No!
I'm loving this setup.
Corey, you've been a fan of Deadpool for a while, in the comics-wise, yeah. Even before the first film came out.
Mm-hmm.
So what was like one of the biggest things you were anticipating when the second film came out? Because obviously the first one was just creating the origin story, and you saw that and you had your thoughts, but the idea of having a film with both Deadpool and Cable in it.
So when I first started like getting into Deadpool when I was, you know, a kid, his costume was what attracted me to him. It's an amazing costume. He looks really cool. When I started reading the comics and getting into it, the thing that actually kept me reading and the most hilarious part about it was his interaction with all the side characters. So the thing I was looking forward to most was all the different pieces of X-Force they were bringing in and all the different characters that he was able to play off of. So I think they did really well. They brought in a bunch of amazing characters.
And they brought back some favorites like Blind Al.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Blind Al. I mean, some people may like him. I'm not too big of a fan of T.J. Miller, but Weasel. Mm-hmm. We mentioned that on the Ready Player One episode. I'm not a big T.J. Miller fan. I don't know. I don't find his humor all that funny.
It's one of those, like, if you like his humor, then you'll like him because he's a one-note guy.
Yeah.
And if you don't like his humor, then you won't like him because he's a one-note guy.
And he doesn't
have a lot of range or versatility.
And this was it just seems like in every movie he plays the same character.
Yeah.
So
well, you can say that about quite a few actors though.
Like who? Spencer, like who? Daniel Day-Lewis? I don't think so. Hit that no button. Hit that no
I'm
button.
I'm not going to. I don't have to. No. No, do it. I'm on the soundboard.
No button no. necessary.
I'm going to get that button.
But I mean I know what you're saying, and obviously there's a possibility for whatever, for somebody to really stretch out of their area of what they've been doing, but I don't know about T.J. Miller. It seems like every role that he played, whether if it was in the first Deadpool, the Ready Player One film, this one, or
Cloverfield, go ahead, throw it back.
No, yeah, he's right.
He's been consistent. I mean, he's been consistently the same.
He's been consistent
for a long time.
He's been consistently one note. Spence, what about you? What were some of your anticipations for this film? Obviously, we talked about what we expected from the first film, but now that you knew Cable was coming into the fray, Domino, and since then, since you've seen the first film, I'm assuming you've gotten more invested, because before Deadpool, you were unfamiliar with the character,
right,
the film, before the film. And so after you saw the film, I'm assuming that you kind of got a little bit more invested in the character, looked up stuff, kind of did some reading.
No.
Okay.
Okay. Like, Spence, because you missed the
button. I had an opportunity and I missed the button.
No!
There we go.
There you go.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no. For me, I didn't, because I was more like interested in what Ryan Reynolds was doing with the character. And so anticipations for this movie were just kind of ramped up a lot by the general marketing campaign for this movie, mm-hmm. which was fantastic, because normally I don't pay attention to, you know, what comes out for, like, you know, trailers and stuff. But, like, there's something about this movie where it kind of just, like, drags you in with just ridiculous comedy. For instance, a Celine Dion music video with someone doing, like, interpretive dance dressed as Deadpool. I mean, that was amazing. I'd never seen anything quite like that.
Which is very similar to what we saw with the first film, where they released it during Valentine's Day weekend, like, timing. And so a lot of their marketing was Valentine's-y, even though Deadpool is not particularly that way ever.
Yeah.
Although, to its credit, the first movie did have a love story as a key ingredient of what made it work.
Oh, and so did this one. I mean, that was a driving plot point to this movie.
Yeah, this. So one of the unique things about the beginning of the film is that, obviously, through that Deadpool commentary that he makes throughout the entire movie, one of the things he mentions at the beginning is that this is actually a family film, or it's a film about family. It's interesting because, like you said, in the first film, he does make the point to say that it's a love story, that it's a love, you know, romance type of film. And then in this one, it's like, oh, it's a family type of film. You know, the next one's going to be about being old or something. I don't know. Don't look at me like that, Spence.
That's just sad. That's all I was saying. It's sad.
So with this film, were there any other anticipations? Anything that you were expecting or hoping to see?
No, I was just excited to see what they were going to bring in with Cable. I'm vaguely familiar with Cable, just like time traveling abilities and like parents, but that's pretty much it. And then I'm not familiar at all with X-Force. So,
and you did touch on something that I kind of wanted to mention, and I bring this up right before we get to Chad, because of the fact that Chad is the marketing expert here, as well as the comic book expert, as well as the Dapper Dan of the table, if you will.
Well, hey, don't stop on my account. Keep going.
Dapper Dan.
But it was interesting as to how they went about with the marketing campaign for this particular film. They upped everything they did last year and amplified it so much more with the usage of, like, Manchester United, with having Celine Dion do an actual song on the soundtrack and doing the music video, to even some of the trailers. Like, one of the best things for me about this film was how much they poked at so many different things, either in the trailers or they hinted at in the film. Like the whole trailer where Cable's arm wasn't
fully... they didn't have the CGI finished.
It's like, well, it's not like it was a mustache, and then he goes, fine, I'll do it myself. And it's like, oh, yeah, I know those references.
They definitely put the extra effort in.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, for the buildup of both films, the first one and this one. They put a lot of extra time into, like, new content that isn't actually part of the movie. It's part of the marketing campaign only, which is not normal. That's not normally how you do marketing for any movie ever, but because of the kind of character he is, because of the kind of story that you're telling, they've done it twice now to great effect.
Mm-hmm.
So what were some of the other things that you, Chad, like, really were looking forward to and even really enjoyed with the marketing? Because I know, like I said, talking about marketing, that's one of the high points for you whenever we talk about films. If there's a really great marketing strategy or campaign or even just an element to it, you kind of give it kudos whenever you see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've talked about it a lot on the previous episode, a little bit here already, about how they think outside the box, they do things differently than other movies. I mean, because you have your typical movie that'll throw all the funny jokes into the trailer, and then you see the movie and you're like, well, all the good stuff was in the trailer, and then you don't like it. or the movie that will put things in the trailer that aren't actually what you see in the movie because they don't want to give away anything. Avengers Infinity War. How many Infinity Stones are in Thanos' gauntlet when he and Steve Rogers throw down in the, you know, forest jungle area of Wakanda, right? That was different in the trailer versus in the actual movie. So there's the whole misdirect thing. But with these films, with this one in particular, it's really not about literally what's in the movie or what's not. It's more the tone. What they're selling you on is his personality and the overall tone of not even necessarily the film on its own, but the holistic experience of watching a Deadpool movie. And it's their greatest weapon in terms of, from a marketing standpoint, from an ability to differentiate this character and this property from all of the other ones, even though he does have strong ties to the X-Men franchise, obviously, yeah. which they lean into. And, you know, but he definitely stands on his own. There's no one else like him in comic books. There's no one else like him in movies. So you've got to lean into it. I think that it requires a lot of, well, according to the character, Deadpool, maximum effort.
Where's that button at?
Oh.
There it is.
Wow.
It requires a lot of extra time, energy. They do extra, like, they film extra things that aren't scenes of the movie. Yeah. They are Ryan Reynolds in a costume, ad-libbing or doing, you know, pseudo-prepared, you know, jokes and whatnot. Mm. And they probably do several dozen of them, and then they pick their favorites, and then that's what we see as the audience to get us excited about the film. I think it's a genius tactic. Nobody else can really do it. They don't even have the option of doing it that way.
That's absolutely true. And it's the nature of the character that lends itself to that, because his character breaks the fourth wall. He has the ability to jump between all of these franchises and everything. So it's actually a kind of a dream for marketers to be able to just use him essentially to connect all of their properties in a way.
For sure. Well, yeah. And I mean, even in panel, so to speak, in frame, in the movie, he will name drop other, like, he'll name drop the DC universe, the MCU, himself, like Ryan Reynolds, the performer, versus Wade Wilson, Deadpool, who knows that he's played by Ryan Reynolds, but doesn't care because he makes fun of him. Like, it's just, there's so much latitude that you have with this character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's one of the, I think if anything, that is the standout notion of this particular franchise. And you know, now we can call it a franchise because there's more than one, and hopefully there'll be a third one. With this particular character, like we said, the flexibility of going in so many different directions is so much the prominent jewel of this crown, I guess, if you want to call it, that they could essentially take further steps. If this merger finally, you know, solidifies between Fox and Disney, I mean, can you imagine the possibilities of seeing that kind of crossover and whatnot? I mean, as great as it is to finally see X-Men make their way over to the rest of the world and what everybody else is watching, seeing things like Deadpool also make that transition over and...
Honestly, once this goes through, because it will, whether it takes a year or 10 years, it will, the first thing I would do is a cut scene with Deadpool. Hmm. In a Marvel film, I would absolutely do it right off the bat because your performer is fully bought in.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you'd have to pay him. But, like, there's all the contractual mess that happens all over the place. Ryan Reynolds, we talked about this in our previous episode. Go listen to it. Lesson 113. On the first Deadpool movie, he is so invested in this character.
Yeah.
I mean, he shows up on Stephen Colbert in costume as the character. He shows up in music videos and what, like, he's willing to put in the time to make it fully be what it can be. I would absolutely stick him in the suit and put him in a mid-credit or end-credit scene as soon as the deal is final. Even if he doesn't belong there.
Oh yeah.
Well, that'd especially awesome. If he doesn't.
Especially if he doesn't belong there.
That's where he shines.
It makes a lot more sense for him to be where he shouldn't. Just plain and simple.
Exactly. Like, just have him on a golf cart eating a chimichanga, driving by in the distance or something, and like saying something to the audience and going, the Avengers turn and they're like, huh? Oh well, okay. And then they keep doing what they're doing. You know, whatever. It doesn't have to be an Avengers movie, but yeah. I would absolutely, he would be the first crossover character. He's the easiest one.
He is the crossover character.
And I think if anything, that is the future golden goose, if you will, of the entire franchise. Once, like you said, once this merger occurs, because anybody with half a brain knows that if you want to continue to make money for this overall franchise, for this entire just, you know, company, the studio, you need to bring all the players together on the same field. And once they do that, bringing him out to an area that's more been known for Disney and whatnot, because let's be honest, Marvel films have kind of been making their leap to being a little bit more, you know, saying curse words here or there, being a little bit more, you know,
edgy.
Exactly. That's the word.
Here's the thing though. I would not, I will qualify my statement a little bit. I would only use him in mid credit and cut scenes. I would not put him in the main films with like a Captain America or a Hulk or whatever. He doesn't, him being like these like punctuation mark moments is more than enough, and then let him have his own movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And like let him in his own movies watch television coverage of the newest group of Avengers fighting the newest bad guy in New York City or whatever, and comment on like, well, that's a stupid plan. Anybody could know they should have called me. And then he goes and does his own thing and doesn't have a thing to do with it. But like, so he can comment from afar. Mm-hmm. I like him as a go-between. I don't know that he works. They do it in the comics to, I think, middling effect. But they make him part of, you know, different team structures. He's comic relief more than anything. He doesn't shine on his own very often when he's part of a team. I think that to get him to shine on his own, you leave him solo. And give him the ability to comment on every single other thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody who's seen those other movies cracks up and just loves him all the more.
There you go. Well, jumping right into the film, as we go into this, let's go ahead and talk about the reintroduction of these characters that we've known. Obviously, like we said, with Ryan Reynolds returning to the fray as the titular character, as well as Marina Baccarin and TJ Miller. And as well as Rihanna Hildebrand and Colossus. I'm just going to call him Colossus. I'm not even going to say his name, just Colossus.
Stefan
Colossus. What?
SNL fans out there anywhere? Nope.
Yeah.
Not that Stefan.
I was going to say that Stefan. Yeah.
Sorry, they can't see us. They can't see us.
And it wasn't me this time.
There are a few characters that come back. There are characters that come back. There are new characters introduced.
There are. And I think one of the things to kind of recognize, this is a different director. This isn't, who was it the first time around? Miller. The director's name?
It's a really good question. I don't have notes from the last show. But you can totally feel the difference. Honestly, that was one of the things that, to me, very, very early on stuck out to me, is that the actual tone and feel of this movie is different. Like, for me, it was right out the gate. It doesn't matter that the character is the same or that you have some familiar faces. It felt different. I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that when you have the you have a character like Deadpool, you have to make sure, number one, that you're right on the money with the character's portrayal, because any deviation from what you've already established in the previous film will cause issues with the fans who have loved the film and have been wanting to see the follow-up, as well as comic book fans altogether. And I do want to say there was a slight difference for me. It wasn't a big change, but it was apparently a big change for you, Chad.
I don't know what you're talking about. Tell me. Well, tell me. Do tell me more.
Finish your thoughts.
So as the film continues, as the film starts out, obviously you're introduced to Deadpool and what he's been doing since then. And ultimately the film's catalyst moment for the entire movie begins within the first 10 minutes of the film. Essentially, his girlfriend, Vanessa, played by Marina Baccarin, is killed in the line of fire when somebody comes to their apartment and shoots her. And that kind of spirals the entire
film. Because they're trying to shoot him.
They're trying to kill him. And that kind of spirals the entire movie into what Deadpool is trying to do. And I'm assuming that's where you feel the deviation begins.
Well, that happened, like you said, that's about 7 to 10 minutes in. I was unhappy in the very first sequence. And that was admittedly because of the subject matter. Anybody who knows me in my non-podcasting life, people know that that my least favorite topic ever in life to ever talk about is people taking their own lives. And the very first sequence, the opening, after the brilliant opening sequence of Deadpool, the first film, the in the middle of a car accident, things are like stuck, and you're panning around a frozen scene, and you've got all the fake credits and all the jabs at everyone, and how just delightfully different it is. This one has a very similar approach in that you're doing a slow pan around, you know, whatever. He's not fully frozen. He's doing some things slowly. It's in slow motion, and you slowly build your understanding and awareness that, oh, he's trying to kill himself because his mutation is to heal rapidly and fully and completely. So you'd have to do something extreme to have any hopes of not having that kind of reanimation, reconstitution in effect. And so he's doing something extravagant to end his own life. And it's kind of played for a laugh in a way, but it's also very, it has a dark tone to it, but also played for a laugh. It's, to me, it was so substantially different right off the bat with no context that I immediately didn't like it. I'm not a fan of the subject. Not that I can't talk about or appreciate storytelling mediums that treat it well. But to have a character like Deadpool start off as serious as it does when you don't yet know the reason why, because similar to the first film, he's going to go back in time and tell you what got him to this point. It just was, for me personally, it was totally the wrong way to start any Deadpool story ever. And even knowing the why later and sort of seeing that sequence lived out again in fast motion, it didn't make it any better for me.
I'm going to bring in kind of a comic book perspective from it, because the character in the comic books, there's in almost every run, there comes a point where he kills himself intentionally, whether it's to save the day or because he's bored or for whatever reason. It's sort of like a just a key aspect of the character. He knows he can't die. So I guess to get some sort of thrill, he kills himself in some way. In multiple runs, he'll do this at some point. So it still held true, I guess, with the comic book character. I know it's not going to make that subject easier to deal with, but
it's also kind of an aspect like of narrative flow. It's fine to say, oh, well, the character does it in the comic books, but to start the movie that way when the other one ended so bright, sunny, happy, and then to go here immediately without any transition moment, I guess. To me, it was like, you're doing it for
shock
a
value.
Thrill
yeah.
versus everything that they did in the first movie felt really smart, even though there were some dumb moments, like really loony, zany, things that make Deadpool fun. You know, like this, it was a lark, really, the whole thing. But this one, I don't know. I think directorially, like tonally, you could tell that it wasn't the same guy behind the camera, basically, for me, because of the way that it started out. Now, are you ever going to get a sequence like that opening credits in Deadpool 1? No, you're not. Like, everything else is going to be derivative. You're going to be trying to get lightning to strike twice in the same place.
Yeah.
But, I think that the disconnect between where the first film ends and the second film begins, and then you immediately rewind anyway to sort of explain why you began the second film where you did, I can see a lot of reasons why they did it. It didn't personally appeal to me very much.
Hmm. What do you think, Spence?
Well, when I saw him trying to blow himself up with a bunch of gasoline, I was a bit, like, the second I saw it, I was like, we're going to have to go backwards, aren't we? And, of course, we did. I'm not really a big fan of, don't you want to know how I got here? I was like, well, just start where we learn where he got there. Like, why do we have to go for this, like, taster preview of something? Plus, I know he regenerates, so he's probably going to live. I saw his head intact. So, like, it's kind of like a waste of time-ish a little bit. But it didn't really bother
me. So you were actually annoyed with the usage, the mechanic of doing something and then freezing time to reflect back on how they got to that point.
Yeah, because like I don't know. Like for me, it kind of felt like a bit of like a dead end where like, you know, we're starting here and like it's like a little nudge and then we have to go back. Mm. Where like in the first movie, like it was kind of thrown in, like it felt more natural, I suppose.
And you knew you were going to build back up to it.
Yeah.
And that it was to see the full sequence of the car chase accident thing was going to be even like at least as delightful as the pan and scan of a freeze frame in the opening. Like to know that you're going to get back there and see the whole thing, not to mention the fact that that was this part of the sequence that was the leaked footage that got the movie made in the first place.
Yeah.
So people were already excited for the freeway sequence before the movie was ever even made. So it had a totally different feel to it, I think. Yeah, in the first one. This one, it's like, well, even if we do build back up to this moment, it's not going to delight. Like, it's not, it won't have the same effect. Like, I won't anticipate it the way that I anticipated that freeway sequence.
Yeah, I feel like if they just cut out like that explosion part at the beginning and just started where they started after that, it would have been fine, a little bit better for me.
Yeah, because you're catching up with what he's been doing in the meantime in the 2 years that have passed between films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, there's a lot going on during that catch-up, so like, there's no real reason, I don't feel like.
Hmm. I don't know. I mean, like I said, I'm, or actually, like I've told Chad off air, I haven't had those same experiences that you've had, and I think for me, like recognizing the, because it didn't hit me right away that you, like you were saying, the act of what he was doing in the more real world aspect of it, I didn't think of that. I just, for me, I was kind of in the same mindset as Corey in terms of, oh well, he regenerates anyway. It's just him, you know, kind of lashing out or doing something, however ridiculous or being Deadpool, And so in my mind, it didn't really annoy me as much as like Spencer was saying, because for me, it kind of tells a little bit of the story before it gets to the main point, and then it reflects back fully through walking through the room and whatnot. So, I mean, to each his own, but I do appreciate your perspective, Chad, because that's something I don't think a lot of people really take the time to recognize, especially when they see movies that are taking certain scenes in jest. Mm-hmm. And not recognizing kind of the full ramifications of what this scene is implying for people who may have a trigger point, if you will.
Sure.
So, but moving forward, the film does continue in a very unique way. And I kind of enjoyed the direction that it took. It is different. It's very different from Tim Miller. I was going to say David Leitch. David Leitch is the director of this one. Where Deadpool is trying to figure out a way to find his way back to Vanessa, in some sense of the way, who has passed, like we said. And so he tries to have a good heart. He tries to become part of a family. And that involves him interacting with the X-Men, meeting the little boy named Russell, played by Julian Dennison, which, if you are unfamiliar with that name, Julian Dennison was the young boy from the film a few years ago called Hunt for the Wilder People. What was the other actor's name in that film? Sam Neill?
Sam Neill.
Sam Neill, I got it.
Dr. Alan Grant.
Exactly.
For those of you playing at home. Or many other things. He's done other things.
He has. Nothing as good as Jurassic Park, though.
He played an Asgardian performer playing
Odin
in Ragnarok.
That he did.
Along with another one of our actual Deadpool 2 cameo actors.
That's right.
Movie trivia. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. No, Kevin Bacon is not in this movie.
Spencer's looking at his soundboard trying to find something to fit in there.
No.
There it was.
But as we're introduced to a lot of the regular characters, like we said, TJ Miller, Marina Baccarin for the little bit of time that she's there, and the woman who plays Blind Al.
Leslie Uggams.
That's her. What's her name?
Leslie Uggams.
Hmm.
And Leslie, don't you forget Uggams. It.
What's her name?
Leslie Uggams.
What's that last name?
Uggams. uggums.
He's getting you good, Spence.
That's
so good.
That's what she said.
Uggums.
But obviously you're introduced to all those returning characters, but you're also introduced to a few new characters. You're introduced to Cable, who is played by Josh Brolin, which, am I the only one that was actually surprised that Josh Brolin did a good job? I mean, not that I didn't I didn't expect him to do a horrible job. I'm not all that familiar with Cable, but from all the images that I've seen and some of the comics that I've seen with him in there, he's a very large and imposing being. And Josh Brolin's kind of small. And he's compared to everybody else, he's 5'11 in the actor world in Hollywood. That's small, okay, for everyone else.
Taller
like,
than me.
Like Chad, who's the tallest one probably. Oh, no, Spencer.
Yeah,
Spencer's taller
than
me.
I am here.
How tall are you, Spence?
I am 6'2".
So Spence would probably be short compared to everyone else out in Hollywood.
I think you're lying.
What? Huh?
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
Why do you think Josh Brolin would
people
be
in Hollywood
fit?
Are like 5'7 to 5'11.
Did you see
really?
No
Generally
Country for
speaking.
Old Men?
No Country for Old Men?
Yeah.
Which one?
Here's my favorite trick. We're not gonna go down that page because we've gone like half an hour and we haven't even talked much about this movie. But if you ever look at an actor in a vehicle, that's where you can tell like what the performer like. Look at them in a seat of a car. See them in relation to the seat of a vehicle. That'll tell you how small they typically tend to be because the camera adds dimensionality. You know, it says the camera adds 10 pounds, but really it's. The camera makes you look bigger, taller, wider, whatever, than you actually are.
I've never thought
of that. Most performers are actually a little, like, they're average or slightly below average in terms of their size and proportions because of what the camera then does to you. But look at them in a vehicle and you'll see, if this person's in an SUV and they're dwarfed by the seat, then it tells you, like, actually how tiny they are in real life.
Huh. No, I never thought of that.
I think Josh Brolin would be on the taller side of most Hollywood actors. I mean, you've got your Hugh Jackmans and your Chris Pratts and whatever that are 6 feet or more, but most of them are going to be shorter than most people are. Honestly, Tom Cruise is not really the outlier in comparison to many other performers. Anyway, Josh Brolin
did a fantastic
Cable
job.
Is very important character in the X-Men mythos.
Yeah.
He's also very important to Deadpool. They had an entire comic book run together, Cable and Deadpool.
They did, yeah. So, they did. But he's very important to the X-Men mythos, which the movie, in ways that would be clear to a fan of the X-Men comic books, the movie telegraphs the fact that they really want Deadpool to be a part of the X-Men trajectory, if you will. You've got not only cameos and people like Cable showing up, and the fact that they're all mutants to begin with, but you've also got smaller nods, like the school that... the kids a part of school is the Essex Home for Mutants. Essex is the last name of the character who is Mr. Sinister, one of the main villains of the X-Men. Not typically connected to Deadpool in any way, which is why it's not beating you over the head with it in the movie. But Cable, people have been wanting Cable in these movies ever since the first couple of movies came out.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that kind of marquee character. So the fact that they waited as long as they did, and now they've introduced him through a Deadpool film rather than like an X-Men proper film, it's an interesting choice. It totally makes sense in the way that he's introduced. And it's exciting to see then what plans they have for him beyond, because he is not just a Deadpool character, nor should he be left only in Deadpool's, franchise within the bigger picture. He should have, eventually, if he's popular enough, he should have his own franchise altogether. But at the very least, he should join the major players elsewhere, just because of the way his storyline works.
Other key characters that were introduced, obviously, as the X-Force is created, is Bedlam, played by Terry Crews. Zeitgeist, played by Bill Skarsgård. Peter, who's played by Tom Delaney, I believe it's. That's the actor's name.
Little Sugar Bear.
You have Domino, played by Zazie Beetz. Mm-hmm. And you have a really interesting cameo of a character that you don't see up until later on. And like we said, spoilers, so don't get all in a tizzy, but You also have another character, another member of the X-Force known as the Vanisher, which you kind of think is a joke until you see this this invisible person sitting in a helicopter with a parachute attached to his back. Like, oh, okay, there's an actual person. But I think one of the things to kind of speak towards in terms of this film is none of those people matter. Like, none of them except for Domino.
Domino.
Because
who is another very important character to Deadpool. She's been in almost all of his runs in the comic books.
Domino in the comics is kind of almost like his caretaker mm-hmm. with regard to the main X-Men. Like,
really?
She keeps tab. They
she's
force
like a handler in
they
a way.
Force her to keep tabs on him when yeah. she doesn't want to. Because she's the only one who is going to put up with his mess.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So then they did her really well then in the film.
They really did.
She was a marquee character. She was a huge debut.
She knocked it out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hmm. And I mentioned the fact that none of the other members of the X-Force really matter in this film. And because of the fact that they're introduced and within 5 to 10 minutes later, they're all dead.
You forgot to mention Shatterstar.
Oh, Shatterstar. I'm sorry. Which is
one of my favorites.
Really?
in terms of characters or in terms of demises?
In terms of mullets.
That was so distracting.
I think that really transcends the definition of mullet, though. I mean, it's like 8 mullets strung together.
It was
it's
like true. He had a bunch of rats in his hair or something.
Wow.
Which is accurate to the comic. I mean, they really did bring the character to life. To a certain extent. They even had him come from the same place that he comes from in the comics, even though it makes no sense to introduce that here.
Not at all.
And so all of these characters, which Shatterstar is played by Louis Tan, all these characters, sadly, don't make that much of an impact in terms of the overall dynamic of the quote-unquote X-Force team. Because as soon as they jump from the helicopter, as soon as from that scene that you see from the trailer... everything goes awry. Deadpool did not account for wind conditions high up in the air.
High wind advisory.
And
which they foreshadow like 3 times before that sequence.
Yes.
And it just makes it even better.
Yes.
And every single one of them, from Bedlam to Zeitgeist to even Peter, all die horribly. Just really bad.
In different ways.
I think the one who got it the worst was probably Shatterstar because it was just so... gross.
Well, and the best part of that is after he got chopped up by the helicopter blades, all that was left was his mullet on the windshield.
I mean, honestly, and I know, well, we know, Deadpool as a property is zany and gory and gross and lewd and crude and whatever. This particular sequence, the parachute sequence, was... by far the thing that I enjoyed the most. I wish it would have been a longer sequence only because it was so funny. And when you know by the second death that it's going to happen to all the rest, like it's clear that the purpose of this scene is not for any of them to make it out alive. Like you just like, oh, you're just going to kill them all individually in stupid, stupid ways. I really enjoyed the sequence.
Well, and also the thing about that is that all of that was almost a display of Domino's power because she's the only one that made it out.
She's like still parachuting.
Mm-hmm.
They
she
all
was
have
on
been
target.
Like, yeah, she's,
she was
she's
the
like,
only one on goes. Target.
Like, yeah, the display of her power set, for those of you playing at home who don't know, her power is luck.
She's just lucky.
Probability influence or whatever you want to call it, but she's lucky. They don't believe her. And yet it proves to be true. And this is a great way to display how her power set works. It's not like a power, like you're not throwing energy around or levitating or teleporting or anything. Which is another reason why it was really funny the way that they did the Vanisher, the way that they did, because he teleports in the comics. Like he's a teleporter. So the fact that he was wearing a parachute at all doesn't make a lot of sense. But I think they were kind of just playing up the name and they made him kind of like the Invisible Woman. He just turned himself. He vanished. He was invisible. But yeah, in the comics, he teleports and he actually has a cool power set and he and Domino worked together a lot at one point. But anyway, beside the point, he gone. Domino's alive.
He gone.
She's amazing. It's a great display of her power in context. Yeah.
No, 100%. And I like kind of like what Corey was saying. I think this was really a highlight for her power set to really, from beginning to end, in that entire scene, that entire like rescue sequence is just showing off all that she can do.
It's really well executed.
Especially when there's that one point where Deadpool is kind of commentating as to how her power set, how her ability is not a power, and how it's not even cinematic, and everything that he's doing, the exact opposite is occurring, and it is being cinematic, and it is making everything. It's just, it's great. On the other side of the spectrum, you have newcomer to this franchise, Russell, played by Julian Dennison, who plays Fire Fist. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now
it's his self-proclaimed name.
Is that an actual character in the comics?
That's a good question.
I've never heard of it.
So there's a whole reason as to why. So like we said, spoilers, blah, blah, blah.
Warning. There you go. Yeah, this is what I thought. Sorry, I had to consult the Google.
The Google.
Because when they said his name is Russell Collins, I'm like, so does that mean that he's Rusty Collins? Because Rusty Collins was a character in the X-Force sort of thread of the comics back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Same power set?
Very similar power set, yeah.
Okay.
Totally different storyline in terms of like he's not a child per se, but I mean he's young still, but anyway, he's part of a love story with I always saw them as a kid when I was reading the comics. It was Skids and Rusty. So Skids is a woman, Rusty is a male, and they're in a relationship.
A real unfortunate name set.
Skids just, and Rusty.
Well, it's because of her power set. I believe that she can glide along surfaces or something like that.
Okay.
And then Rusty, I don't know why he never really, I mean, I guess Fire Fist was his name, but you never really hear him as his designation. It's always Rusty. But anyway,
he was made fun of for his name. I think he became self-conscious about it, so he just went by Rusty.
Rusty, yeah. Fire Fist just wasn't kind of like Taser Face, right?
Yeah.
Taser Face.
Who chooses Taser Face?
Name is Taser Face.
Yeah, anyway, something really bad happens to them, and I believe that they die.
Skids and Rusty?
Skids and Rusty, yeah. But this kid, Russell, apparently has basically the same name, same power set, but you find him at an earlier part of his story.
Yeah.
So the way that they're telling the story in this movie is different.
And he's from New Zealand.
That's true.
Well, the story goes in this particular film is that Russell ultimately grows up and ends up killing Cable's family. That is why Cable goes back in time to kill Rusty so that Rusty... Oh my gosh, Russell. Now that Rusty is stuck in my head.
See what you did, Chad?
to kill Russell so that Russell will not do that to his family. So that's the whole purpose behind Cable's coming back in time. But Russell is a very... So the actor himself, Julian Dennison, if you're not familiar, he's a very... For his age, he's a very crude actor. What's the word, Chad? What am I thinking here?
I'm not sure.
Foul-mouthed?
He's very foul-mouthed. He's a very interesting individual in terms of performer and whatnot in films. Because even in Hunt for the Wilder People, he's the same way. He's crude. He cusses. He wears Tupac and Biggie shirts in the middle of like some farmland and acts gangster.
I think the term you're looking for is thug life. Sorry, Spence.
No.
No!
It wouldn't activate.
Crickets. No, but he's a very interesting performer, but you are introduced to him as well as your surprise character in the film, which debuts later as the film continues. Which we'll get to in a second, but
true.
There are a lot of little cameos throughout this film. There's a lot of little nods to the comic books that if you're not somebody who is like Chad or Corey, it would probably like go right over your head and be like, oh, That's actually something of importance. Like, Chad, I see your computer screen open. So,
right.
There's an introduction to a character named Black Tom Cassidy who happens to be a white guy.
So this is awkward. No, the Deadpool, he's distraught when the love of his life is killed before his very eyes, right? And during when he's actually trying to recover, he does go to the X-Men mansion. Colossus is still trying to reach out, to be that supportive friend, reaching out, like, let me help you get on the right path again. And so he gives the X-Men a try. He reunites with Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead. He meets another character by the name of Yukio. And they have kind of a fun little...
Hi, Wade.
Just...
Hi, Yukio.
Hi, Yukio. Like, they just... They do that all the time. It's really... It's funny. But when Fire Fist kind of breaks out at the Essex school and the authorities are trying to shut him down, the X-Men go to intervene, and Deadpool is the one who kind of, well, basically nominates himself ultimately as the emissary. Long story short, Deadpool does something Deadpool-y and doesn't behave like an X-Man, so Colossus kind of excommunicates him, and both Wade and Julian are taken to a maximum security prison where they put mutation dampening collars on you so that you can't use your powers.
The icebox.
So they are now in the icebox, and they meet, well, a few characters, one of whom is an Irish guy. And as soon as he started talking with his Irish brogue, I was like, oh, this is, they're putting Black Tom Cassidy in this movie. Why would you do that other than to make fun of him? In the comics, Black Tom is, and that is what he goes by in the comics. So the fact that he's a white Irish guy.
With dreadlocks.
Okay, wait.
He doesn't have dreadlocks in the comics. That was a choice they made for this movie.
Why is he called Black Tom?
We don't know. I don't.
He has black hair. That's what I'm going to go
probably
with.
I mean, it's probably as simple as that. He's actually Banshee's brother.
Yes.
So Banshee is Sean Cassidy, and then Black Tom Cassidy is Tom Cassidy.
Banshee is a ginger.
And for a long, long time in the comics, Black Tom Cassidy is the partner in crime of one of the X-Men's longtime major villains, the stepbrother of Charles Xavier, Kane Marco, who is the Juggernaut. So in seeing Black Tom Cassidy in the jail, my thought was, oh, so then the Juggernaut has to be in this movie. Why would you introduce Black Tom Cassidy? Because literally, this is the description of Black Tom Cassidy's power set, and this is great. Black Tom is a mutant who can manipulate, bond with, and project energy through plant life. He's also capable of issuing concussive blasts with a wooden object, usually a shillelagh, because he's Irish.
Wow.
So he can hit you really hard with a shillelagh, and you go flying. Right? So, yeah. So anyway, in the comics for many, many decades, you saw one with the other. Black Tom and Juggernaut always kind of went side by side because they were always planning heists together and plots and whatever. They were just always partners in crime. And so in this film, you learn that there is someone down in the basement of the icebox who is...
Large
and can shake the entire prison
and is in like maximum security.
And
yeah, like,
and then
everyone
seeing
else
Black Tom, you're like, oh well, that's going to be the Juggernaut,
and sure enough, it's the Juggernaut, which you do find out later on as the film continues. As well, the first instance you see him, he rips Deadpool in half, which is
literally,
right,
which
in front of you,
down the middle.
Well, not down the middle, but like.
Okay, across the middle.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would have been a little bit too graphic to watch.
He was turned sideways, so it was down the middle, I guess.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, a middle was involved.
Yeah. A middle was involved.
And a direction.
Down.
Well, now that we have that all figured out.
But there were a bunch of other little things throughout the film that keen eyes probably missed and didn't get a chance to see. Things like... Chad had mentioned earlier that a character that was in the Ragnarok film also has a little bit of a role in this film, which is Matt Damon. Matt Damon.
Not a character, but an actor,
No.
Yes.
He it's just a simple cameo. Matt Damon played Loki in a performance of the tragedy
of Asgard. Yeah, the tragedy of Loki of Asgard. Right. When Thor returns to Asgard and Loki is impersonating Odin, watching a stage play of his own, like, elevated act from the dark world. And yeah, so Matt Damon played the stage version of Loki for Loki being Odin. Yeah. Anyway, it's complicated. It's easier when you see it. Matt Damon was in Ragnarok for a few seconds.
And in this film,
he's in it for a few seconds as a redneck who is talking about the joys of wiping your behind with a baby wipe.
Yep, that's it.
Well, there's a whole procedure involved with toilet paper first, then the baby wipe, then more toilet paper.
And then a hair blower.
Yep.
Yeah, I started to tune out the movie at this point.
I was going to say, I don't remember any of those details because I was not paying attention.
I was not. And I think that's also why I didn't notice it was Matt Damon either, because like once they started talking, I was like, no.
It's definitely not one of those scenes where you're led to believe that you should try to recognize the performers.
Right.
It's totally played off as a throwaway scene.
To be fair, though, this Deadpool we're talking about, so you never know.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
All I know is I was wishing that Cable was walking just a bit faster.
Pick up the pace, buddy.
Another one of those unique cameos, if you will. We did mention a character named The Vanisher or Vanisher. Which you never see him because obviously he's invisible, but
and they couldn't afford him,
probably. But in the interest of the scene that Chad loved so much earlier of all the deaths of the members of X-Force, you do see when Vanisher flies into a power line and gets zapped.
Which is so funny because you only see the backpack. Like, you only see the backpack flying toward the power line until he hits.
What does Deadpool say? You can't, maybe you can't kill what you can't see or something. Either way,
still
Vanisher hits the power line and then sparks start flying. As soon as he's dead, you begin to see the actual face of Vanisher.
He unvanishes.
It's for a brief, like, brief second.
Oh, yeah. It's like for a brief second and a half.
I mean, didn't even recognize him.
It was like so brief, it was probably just like a JPEG of Brad Pitt's face.
It was a PNG. They just put it over.
That would be even funnier.
The actor who apparently portrayed Vanisher was Brad Pitt. In very much so. It almost looked like a younger Brad Pitt.
It was definitely a youngified
Which is
Brad
why
Pitt.
They couldn't afford him.
Ah, so they went back in time and bought the
No, they just took a screenshot of Fight Club and then copied and pasted. Yeah,
that's exactly, I
was
going to
say
like.
Seven, but yeah, Fight Club works too.
Yeah, seven's okay.
One of those.
Did anybody catch anything else that stuck out of the film? Any little...
The obvious is when Wade first gets to the mansion and he talks about, again, why are there no X-Men? It's like they're all in a secret room with us. And the camera literally like flips around real quick.
You see Beast.
Shows you most of the X-Men who are part of the, you know, the current iteration of the prequel movies. Yeah. And Beast closes the door so that they don't have to deal with them.
Yeah.
Because you have James McAvoy. You have Beast, which is played by, what's his name? The guy from Mad Max. Nicholas Holt. You had a lot of the
Ty Sheridan is Cyclops, so yeah, he's there.
And then the girl who plays
Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, Game of Thrones.
This is why we should do our notes and everything.
Research.
Which originally they were filming kind of in tandem. Deadpool 2, which was filming in Canada because Ryan Reynolds is Canadian and they like to make sure that you know a lot of Canadian references in both films. Also, the X-Men franchise of late has been filmed in Canada. Mm. And so Dark Phoenix, which was originally going to come out in November, now it's scheduled for, I believe, next year. They started filming essentially as Deadpool 2 was wrapping up. So they had some carryover. They do a cameo. It's not meant to make you believe that Deadpool 2 takes place in the 90s like Dark Phoenix will, but just sort of it was that fourth wall breaking, overall total wall breaking moment.
So I think I say all these things and we go through a lot of these characters and it's really interesting to see all of them in the fray. Like Corey says, it's Deadpool. anything can pretty much happen. But I want to go back to something that we really kind of mentioned at the beginning, which was the difference between this film and the previous. And what were some of the most standout portions of the film that really either makes it better or makes it worse? Because I know one of the things that Chad said was that that opening scene really kind of killed the momentum for him for the rest of the film because of the subject matter. But what other scenes really kind of changed the I guess, the way the film was being originally, you know, shot, or the way it was being, the story was being told in the first film, and kind of how it deviated from that in this film?
Well, I think I would say, like, the main difference for me was just the overall flow of the story.
Okay.
Because in the first movie, it's kind of much more narrow, and, like, you know, Deadpool's going after Francis to fix his face. That's what he's doing, so he can get back with Vanessa. Over here in Deadpool 2, we're kind of, like, just meandering a bit because he, as a character, is meandering a bit after the loss of Vanessa. Because, like, you know, first he's, like, going after people, taking them out. Then once he loses Vanessa, it's kind of like, you know, where are we going next type stuff.
Loses focus.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, that's a, makes sense. That's actually a really good observation. I didn't even think of that. But it's true. I can agree with that. And I think that kind of aimlessness of the storyline, I think that's kind of a representation, in my mind, of the character's own lost and uncertain future of what he wants to do. And mind you, I get it. I really do see that now that you mentioned it. I'm like, oh, yeah, it kind of was a little here, there, everywhere. But I kind of really wanted this film to work, and I actually did have a good time with it. And I think, speaking to what Corey mentioned, I think the film really tried to mimic what exactly you got the feeling from when you read the comics, especially when it came to certain parts with Deadpool and Cable together. And even though it was, I'm agreeing with Spencer. Even though it was,
wow, why isn't there a wow button on the soundboard?
You look, wow.
I don't know.
No, even though I do agree with Spencer, I think though that that was kind of on purpose in my mind. I don't know. What do you think, Chad?
That it meandered?
On purpose, yeah.
Yeah, yes. I don't know that the second film of a franchise like this is the place to do that. I think it would feel better as a third. Not introduce Cable, introduce Domino, have X-Force form and then die and whatever. Like, all that is fine for the second film of a Deadpool franchise. But to have him lose his bearings and meander around and form this really sort of not there, but sort of strong bond with the kid who's lashing out and want to not help him, but also want to help him at the same time and not give up on it. Like, it just was all very middling. Like, the motivation was kind of wishy-washy there. Yeah. And I think that it would fit more with if we had another thing in between that we don't have. And maybe it would be if you expanded on the sequence from the beginning where it shows how he, for a while, did try to take out really bad people and do things that none of the other quote-unquote heroes were willing to do. Like, he's like, I'm willing to get my hands dirty and actually take out the real bad guys in despicable ways that suit what they're doing to other innocent people or whatever. Hmm. I think something that fit more in that time frame, the chronology of Deadpool, if you will, something like that would have made for you know, in some ways a more expected storyline, but at the same time, it would have led into a little more smoothly, more of a, I'm in a dark place, I lost my anchor point, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, it's just, it's all kind of slapdash is what it felt like from a story structure standpoint. It felt, I agree, Spencer, it felt very meandering instead of like, I have a purpose with this story that I'm telling.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Corey?
Well, between, like, kind of jumping into a different subject, between the first and second movies, from the perspective of reading the comic books and you know, how much I love that character from the comic books, I was expecting more of a descent into madness from the character, because in the comic books, he has massive brain tumors, and that's why he's crazy. That's why he can break the fourth wall, is because these tumors are essentially messing with his brain.
Yeah.
It makes him you know, seem crazy to everybody else. But then as a reader, you're like, no, it makes sense. But then that makes you feel crazy as a reader. And that's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's always fun.
Yeah. So
I enjoy comic books telling me I'm crazy.
So as the story of Deadpool in the films progressed, I was expecting him to lose more of a grip on reality, things to get a little bit more chaotic for him in his mind. Like in the comic books, he's got multiple voices in his head. Mm-hmm. Like he's got split personality disorder of the highest degree. Like,
yeah,
these other voices are, they have their own, you know, writing style in the
yeah,
panels and everything. Like they're completely separate voices. They would be voiced by different people where they've like actual voiceovers in the film. And I think that would be an amazing way to go with the character. But they haven't done anything like that. He's still a pretty high functioning person. He's still relatable. He's a little bit crazy, but not, you know, multiple personality,
yeah,
kind of crazy. And so for me, like, I love the character in the comic books because that's where some of the greatest jokes are, when he's talking to himself in a way. Like the different voices are playing off of each other. One's saying, you know, kill this guy, and the other one's saying, like, no, we should help the X-Men, and the other one's like his actual voice. He's like, okay guys, just shut up for a second so I can think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's those kind of playing voices playing off of each other that I love, and they haven't been able to do that. So between like the first one was establishing the character, the first film, and I thought it was fine. He was, you know, in touch with reality, but I was expecting this second one to dive a little bit more into that, into his whole mental health.
Yeah.
But they didn't, they kind of continued the love story, which is a little bit irritating for me.
Oh, that was the irritating part for you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting. And I can see where you guys are coming from in terms of, the story being something that should have been kind of addressed. Maybe like this would have been a good third film or
yeah,
something along that lines. So it sounds like there should have been something that kind of bridged the gap between these two films and or different direction, like Corey said, altogether.
Mm.
I think entertainment wise, I mean, I liked the story in terms of this one, although like I said, agree with Spencer. It was
get a sigh first.
No say?
Nothing? No, I have nothing to say.
You have nothing to say?
Except that?
Okay. Even though it was all over the place, I did enjoy the kind of redemptive qualities that this storyline did have for Deadpool, even though it is still some of the beginning iterations and versions of Deadpool, the before he kind of goes into the fray where Corey's talking about with craziness and whatnot. I don't know. I actually enjoyed the movie, so... I don't know.
Well, that's not to say I didn't. I guess, like, I didn't really think about it, but I don't think I really expected Vanessa to stay with him at the end of the first movie, because I thought he would have been a crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Because, like, just the ability to, like, lop off an arm and then just watch it grow back, like, you're going to be messed up. Like, to put it mildly.
To put it mildly.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty creepy if you just did that and they're like, oh, don't worry, guys. It'll grow back in about an hour.
Yeah. And then you just have like a tiny baby hand just like floating over here.
Spencer with tiny baby legs. Baby legs and regular legs. So here's then the final question, if you will. Does the direction of this story in this film make this one a better one or a worse one than the first one? I mean, I obviously it seems like a no-brainer for some of you guys, but... I don't know. I wouldn't say it makes it better, but I think it still continues the story progression. But I think there's people at this table that have differing opinions.
Why are you looking at me?
Because I
my
Chad has one of the strongest opinions on this table, and I appreciate
that. I have a gripe with the tone. Tone of this did not match the tone of the first. I really enjoyed the tone of the first. It was... There was a lot of serious content in the first one. He was being tortured in order for his mutation to manifest in the first place. Mm-hmm. His girlfriend is kidnapped and held for ransom. He's helping a random cab driver abduct some guy that's going after his girlfriend. And like,
I forgot about that.
All of this stuff. Like there was so much like just frenetic, but overall upbeat energy. Like there was a brightness to the way that all of the darkness was being addressed. This movie, and I do think that it's... I like to harp on the fact that any movie that you see is the end product of a large team of people. It's not one person who makes it or breaks it. However, If there is one person who influences the creative process more than any other single person, it would be the director of the film. Even up to and including Ryan Reynolds in this case as the star performer, doing all the quippy puns and the, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think directorially, this one was just so different in a lot of small ways that for me really added up to an inferior product in comparison with the first. Do they hit a lot of the same beats? Yes, but they don't innovate on them. One of the things that will be a challenge for this particular character and franchise moving forward is Deadpool is not allowed to get stale. He's not going to be Deadpool anymore if he's stale. He always is ahead of the curve in terms of basically everything that he does. And I felt like there were some decisions very similar to how I felt watching The Force Awakens a couple years back, 3 years or whatever, mm-hmm. where it was like, oh, so you basically took the script for A New Hope, you deleted this specific detail and inserted another one, and you sort of changed the set dressing a little bit, but basically a lot of it feels extremely familiar. Mm. Now, was there a purpose there? Yes, because the prequel trilogy was garbage and you needed to recover from that with something that people like more.
Tell us how you really feel.
But in this instance, Deadpool was very well received. There wasn't anything about it that said, oh, go ahead and do that framework again, but change the specifics of the story. Like, I would have loved to see a completely different opening sequence or, you know, a completely different, I don't know, like the way that he interacts with Colossus and the X-Men is totally different this time around. You know, like, just why do something that feels familiar when it's only the second film in the franchise and it's Deadpool, for crying out loud?
Absolutely.
He can do literally basically anything.
Anything, yeah. He can genre bend. Like, he could essentially make a Deadpool movie in almost every genre. You could make a horror Deadpool.
Yeah.
You could make just a slapstick comedy Deadpool. You could make, like, you know, a drama or
and there are moments that do touch on it. Like the sequence in the beginning after the opening credits, but the sequence where he's offing a bunch of bad, terrible people. Like, one of them, he shows up in stiletto heels and he's, you know, a stripper at a stripper club or whatever, but he's in full costume with a wig and stilettos. That is very Deadpool.
Yeah.
Or the, obviously we've talked about it already, the way that X-Force meets their end on before their first mission even starts. Like, that is very Deadpool. Yeah. And then there are some other things that this movie did that I just, it was like, okay, if you choose to tell the story that way, all right, that's your prerogative.
Yeah, well.
So there you go. Those were my strong thoughts.
There you go. Well, with that,
did anybody else have strong thoughts?
Yeah, actually.
Or were you okay with it? I really did. After the movie was over, there was a whole group of us beyond just the four of us. There was a group of people that had gone to see it. I totally did feel like the only person who did not enjoy myself in the theater. And in all likelihood, it's because of the subject matter of the opening credit sequence really was off-putting to me right from the beginning. And I had a hard time paying attention to the humorous stuff later. Aside from, again, the aforementioned parachute sequence, which I loved.
Which is interesting because right when we got home, me and Chad were talking about it, and Chad actually made the statement that I hope never to hear again from his lips.
Ooh, what did I say?
And he said, I actually can see what Omar was talking about.
Oh, I did say that.
No!
What?
I said it. Omar, I hear you, buddy. I hear you.
What in the world?
I pulled out my Bible and began to pray for the man. Just to,
exorcism. I did say it.
But, yeah.
I'm proud of it. I'm not ashamed.
I'm not.
you really shouldn't be.
Did anybody else have any, you know, strong feelings like that in terms of, like, once the film was done?
I actually had kind of an opposite reaction. When I watched the first film, I don't know if it's true or if I'm just in a different place emotionally or what, but the first one to me seemed overtly sexual at every turn. Like, every joke seemed to be some sort of sexual joke, and it made me uncomfortable. It was just like, okay, enough. Like, let's get some humor in here that's not, you know, about that kind of subject matter. And so I tell everybody, when I first saw the first film, I laughed the whole time, but I felt like I needed to take a shower afterwards.
Yep.
And this didn't have all that. It still had a, you know, it was dark humor, and like Chad said, it was brought in less of a, you know, campy kind of lighter way, But since I might be wrong, but it didn't seem like it had all of that, you know, sexual humor. Like, it wasn't just every scene like something sexual. And again, I could be wrong. I could have just missed all of it, but it made me feel, after I watched the second one, like it was just as funny to me, and I didn't feel like I needed to take a shower. At least not that long of one.
Interesting. What about you, Spence?
Well, really, it was just like, I'm just stuck on really the story differences between the first one and the second one. And I won't say it's worse, but it's not better. So for the third one, I'd say do something different.
I like the sound of that.
Do something different. Okay.
I want to see Deadpool and dinosaurs. That would be amazing.
I want to see Deadpool and Dupe.
Yes.
I want Dupe to show up in a Deadpool
Dupe.
3.
That would be amazing.
I'm sorry. What in God's name is Dupe?
Go look it up. D-O-O-P. It's like poop, but with a D at the front.
Dupe.
Do you know what they're talking about?
Yes, I do know about it.
Hey, if you can bring Zeitgeist into this movie, then you can bring Dupe into the third one.
Well, there you go. Why don't we jump around the table and actually give our ratings as we choose whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. And let's go ahead and start with the guest here on the show, Mr. Corey James.
Do it!
I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
So, does the film pass or fail in terms of it being a film and what it sets out to do? And how many monocles out of 5 would you give it?
It was definitely a film.
Okay, so it passes.
Great,
it
passes.
It was not a car, so it
great.
Worked in
Darn.
That sense.
I appreciate the logic.
I sat in a theater and watched people acting, so it was a film.
Sometimes you go to the theater and that's not what happens.
Sometimes it's steaming.
Where
pile.
Are you going?
You know, sometimes you're in there and it's like the Hurricane Heist, where people are just like moving images and nothing's really making any sense.
I'm tracking with you, Spencer. Don't worry.
Thank you. Thank
Don't
you.
Worry.
I was a little worried. It was like I walked into a 7-Eleven. They told me it was a theater. I sat for 2 hours looking at those burritos. Just
watching the hot dogs revolve.
Exactly.
This is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Worst movie ever.
All right. And how many monocles out of 5?
I would give it 3.
3 monocles out of 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was entertaining, but not the best.
There you go. Spencer, what about you?
Yeah, this movie passed for me. I did not see it at a 7-Eleven, so...
It wasn't hot dogs.
It was not hot dogs.
Sure, it wasn't chimichangas?
It was not chimichangas.
Ooh, that would get a pass, though.
Mm.
Only because of Deadpool.
Yeah.
Chimichangas.
And for me, I'll give it like a 3.5 out of 5. It was still a good movie in my books, but like... I think we need like a slightly different direction for the next one, which I'm still excited to see.
Mm-hmm. I want to save Chad for last. Because I want him to have that dramatic effect. The film is going to have to pass for me. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed some of the elements of the film. I do believe there's much room to grow. And hopefully as the film continues to be successful, which it will, they soon announce the next film that will be made for them, Deadpool 3. Because it wasn't very long after or before even the first film came out that they announced there was going to be a sequel. So I'm hoping soon enough they're going to announce that there's going to be a third film and what that's going to entail. In terms of monocles, I am going to give it 3.5 out of 5. I liked the elements of the film. I liked what it meant. I liked what it did. I thought there was growth, like I said. But 3.5 out of 5. And now, drum roll.
Well, should I dramatic pause?
Hold on. I want to update my monocles because I didn't know y'all were going to give it a 3.5. So I'm going to add a 0.5 because I don't want you guys to have more monocles than me.
We don't do updates, so no. What does that have to do
Good
with
job,
anything?
Spencer.
I didn't do it! I'm being framed! Okay. What's it mean?
I'm being framed.
Okay, yeah, we're just going to move this away from here.
We might just have to bring Corey on just to use the soundboard.
That's pretty extraordinary. Let's see. So thank you for filling my dramatic pause with comedy. I appreciate it. I'm going to say that this film does pass. My teeth are a little gritted about it because I wouldn't say I super enjoyed it. But there were a lot of elements in it that were good. They match with what trajectory was set in the first film. There were some funny jokes. I do think there was a lot more crude humor than might have... people might not have noticed all of it, especially when T.J. Miller is in the scene, because that's kind of what he specializes in. But yeah, so anyway, their monocles, I'm going to give it two. One of them for Domino, one of them for the Colossus versus Juggernaut scene. Because that was fun.
And the music involved.
Yes, the music involved. The fact that they previewed it by saying, I smell a CGI fight coming on or something like that. Like, everything about it really worked. I forgot to give any monocles to the parachute sequence.
So three monocles.
No,
three?
I'll still leave it at two.
Aww. I mean, it would still be
you
less
could give
than
it
all
half
of
one.
It's really part of what makes Domino so cool, though.
You could give the CGI fight half a monocle.
I'll give it 2.25.
So two and a half.
Yeah.
What?
He just does not want to let go of those
no,
monocles.
No, I don't. They're prized possessions here at the Filmlosophers. Yeah, fine. 2.5.
There you go.
50% for those of you tracking my math skills at home.
Yes.
There are some. You know who you are.
Well, this is...
I can do math, I promise.
Quick math. So with that it was... Like I said, I'm sorry. The whole math thing's got me tripped up now. Yes.
I'm not fully in control of the soundboard.
This moment
I just
want
to throw it out.
By.
You could be.
But yeah, let us know your thoughts. If you saw the film already and you have actually opposite opinions or you agree with some of us, let us know on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Let you know before we go, the couple upcoming weekend releases, actually only one that's really worth mentioning, and that's Solo, A Star Wars Story. So if you're excited about that as much as we are, we can't wait to see it. We want to thank Corey for making the time to coming down here and recording with us.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, and, Corey!
Yeah.
And we hope to have you back soon because this is a great conversation and you hijacking the soundboard from Spencer has been probably...
Yo, no!
There it is.
All right.
So... this has been the best kind of chaos in the world.
Oh my gosh. No!
So, with that, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.